Hello, you're back with Green Left on 3CR, and we have here Sue Bolton, who's a Moreland councillor and was also a candidate running in the seat of Wills. Thanks for being here, Sue. We've had a very interesting federal election, and yeah, we're hoping to get some of your thoughts on, you know, first of all, you know, what, I mean, you were running with Socialist Alliance, so what Socialist Alliance thinks about the election results, and, you know, maybe we can talk about, you know, sort of the modest socialist vote increase, and including the Pat O'Shane campaign.
Well, I think, first of all, I think it is a great election result, really. I mean, because I think if Morrison government had have been re-elected, there would have been a lot of demoralisation in the progressive movement, I think. And I think what the dumping of Morrison shows is that even though Morrison is the classic ad man, a bit like Tony Abbott, can, you know, I mean, all of these mainstream capitalist parties have, you know, armies of spin doctors to tell you that black's white and white's black. And, you know, Morrison has those in spades. But I think real lived experience of the Morrison government is really what caused Morrison to be turfed out. And it also was pleasing that coming out of the pandemic, where, you know, a lot of people did suffer during the pandemic, a lot of people were very frustrated. We saw those big so-called freedom rallies of the anti-vax, anti-lockdown movement. And I was worried that there was would be a much higher vote for the far right. And that, you know, while there was a vote for the far right with Clive Palmer's, you know, millions of dollars of you know, advertising, it wasn't like a massive vote for the far right. And actually the Pauline Hanson vote went down in the seats that she stood in 2019 and stood in again this year. Her vote actually went down. So she's actually struggling to get a Senate spot in Queensland. She probably will still get a Senate spot, but her vote's gone down, basically. Probably it is spread amongst several far-right parties, but even the Clive Palmer vote, they probably will get a senator in Victoria, the last Senate spot. But it's not, that's not certain. And I think Clive Palmer's main reason for, you know, running in the elections, the same as last time, was to use his preferences to get a Liberal Party government elected, and that is in order to get his mines approved. That's failed. So I think that's really good. Craig Kelly lost his seat. And then I think on the other side of it, you know, the Greens have picked up seats, and the Queensland Greens are probably the most left-wing branch of the Greens in the country. And I think that was evident in the seat of Griffith, where they definitely picked up a seat. And so I think that, you know, they're now going to be 12 Green senators, which will be a change. And then, you know, the Teal independents, you know, probably they are going to be a mixed bag. I mean, they're not from the left, but that will shake things up a bit, getting rid of all of those Liberal National Party ministers and MPs. And it creates, even though some of these Teal independents have probably got quite conservative politics on economic issues, that will shake things up still in Parliament. And some of them might be open to more progressive ideas on certain issues like refugees, and we're yet to see. But really how far things can be pushed with this new parliament will depend on whether or not the movements mobilise. And I think that's a critical thing we've got to learn out of the last time we had a Labor government, with the Rudd-Gillard government, when the movements went to sleep We've got to keep the pressure on because the Labor Party's actually got a pretty conservative agenda. They're not promising to change that much. They'll change a few things, and a few things, some of those things will be very welcome, like the Bill Wheeler family, you know, will be going back to Bill Wheeler, and be freed, and there'll be certain of the worst extremities of various policies that will be gone, like temporary protection visas they've pledged to abolish, which is great, will be great for tens of thousands of refugees in this country. But on the other hand, all of the refugees who arrived by boat since 2013, the Labor Party's got an identical policy with the coalition of never resettling those refugees. So the movement has to get back on the streets.
Do you think it's much of a concern that... Do you think it's much of a concern that the refugee movement in particular would demobilise? Because it's been my experience, at least in Melbourne, that the refugee movement here is a bit more left than the Labor Party. I think we were talking to Sue Bull a little while ago, talking about the Labor movement and particularly the unions, that being a concern in terms of demobilisation. But... in terms of, I guess, to turn that into a question, where are the areas you think that are most likely to kind of demobilize as a response to Labor winning? And is there any pithy way to try and deal with that, to try and help those movements not demobilize?
Well, I guess, one of the problems is even before the Labor victory and coming out of the pandemic, there has been too little mobilisation. And in fact, the left has lost some ground to the far right, actually, I'd say, because the far right didn't really care about COVID restrictions and the left did. And so the far right was mobilising and then we weren't. I think probably first off, there's been very little climate mobilisation. And in reality, I think that is the dominance of the climate NGOs that don't see the need to mobilise, or else if they do, they want branded actions of just their own organisation. They don't want to unite in a big mass climate rally. And so, the School Strike for Climate has been welcome, but that's not sufficient by itself. Yeah,
I remember going to the most recent school strike action, and compared to the one last year, I think it was, which was absolutely massive. Like, this one still had got good numbers, but you could tell that, for one, it was maybe not as well organized, but they definitely didn't have as much backing this time. Mm. And there were way, way fewer people, I remember. And because that is a good point as well, is that circling back to the Teal independence and like Labor's policy on climate change and stuff, is if you have a lot of the Teal independents running as basically liberals, but they care about climate change, they care about it in a capitalist way anyway. So those quote unquote solutions aren't going to be actual solutions anyway. So I think that is a good movement to pinpoint.
I think that's important because one of the problems over the last 10 years, probably actually longer, is that, there have been periodic climate mobilizations, but nowhere near frequently enough. Mm. And basically what it means is the movement isn't frequently mobilized to expose the problems with the government's agenda, like in that case it was Morrison. But even with Labor is planning to expand gas. Mm. So, yes, they've got, a little bit stronger targets than the coalition, and so in that sense it's better, but it's nowhere near strong enough. Mm. And even the Zali-Steggall climate bill was also nowhere near enough. It was sort of looking at the 2050 target for zero emissions, which is way too far in the future.
Yeah.
In the refugee movement, it is one of the movements that has kept mobilising and attempting to mobilise through the pandemic, etc. I think the last experience of a Labor government is the refugee movement almost disbanded entirely. Mm. I think this time around it might not be the same. I'm hoping it won't be. And I think it probably won't be because of the fact that the Labor government is still supports boat turnbacks and has already turned back a boat and is identical with the coalition on supporting offshore processing for anyone who arrived after 2013. So I don't think it will go back to bed with that. And then I think but there are other issues which are really important, like the Labor Party pulled back from its earlier agreement under the previous Labor leader to review the rate of JobSeeker. I mean, JobSeeker as of a couple of years ago, it was $180 a week below the poverty line. It's probably something like $200 a week below the poverty line now. So this is disastrous, and no one's pledging to do anything around the issue of building a serious building of public housing program. And then in terms of unions, like, you know, sure, it's great that Labor said that they want to increase the minimum wage by the rate of inflation, but the thing is, all of these anti-union laws that stop workers getting organised for pay rises need to be repealed, and they haven't pledged to do that yet.
Thanks for giving us that insight. And you have mentioned a few big issues that actually did shape this election, you know, things like climate, the housing market, cost of living, refugees. But you've been a Moreland council for 9 years or 10 years now. And, you know, you've had, you know, and even before that, you had decades of experience in grassroots community activism and, you know, including public housing campaigns. And, you know, you did stand for the seat of Wills in this election. So, you know, when you were door knocking and talking to people, what did you find that people were most worried about this time around? You know, what do you think had the most impact on these election results, especially in your area?
Yeah, I think, I mean, probably a consistent thing didn't really come through. I mean, I do think, you know, for a lot of people, especially in the northern part of the Wills electorate, which is the northern part of Moreland Council, the cost of living issues are absolutely really key. And, you know, both the rate of, you know, JobSeeker and pensions and so forth, the insecure work, which actually could be really fixed quite easily. Like, anyone who's worked for the same boss for 6 months, who's working as a casual, should have that job offered to them as a permanent job, because it's really a permanent job. But the boss is refusing to allow it to be permanent. You know, all of those sort of economic security issues. And probably because the student movement hasn't been so active, there hasn't been as much discussion during the election campaign about student debt and student issues. But I think those issues, you know, would be highly relevant as well. And, but I think it is really the cost of living issues, but also for different people, climate was an issue. Refugee rights was an issue, anti-racism and so forth were issues. It really, I don't think there's sort of one issue you can put it down to. And then I think people have been affected by seeing, you know, the various disasters of the federal government, from the vaccine rollout to the lack of testing over Christmas and the gigantic queues to the bushfires and the floods. So In Lismore in Queensland, where people, you know, were sitting on roofs waiting to be rescued, only to not have any rescue boats arrive. So all of that, I think, has had an impact on, you know, and it busts through the idea that Morrison is a can-do government. So all of those ideas are really there, and the Labor Party's not going to magically fix all of those ideas, and it means, especially with things like the rate of increasing Centrelink payments, like that really is something we need a concerted effort from the progressive movement to do.
Go for it, Ari.
Okay. I was just going to make the comment that Morrison never said he was a can-do government. He said he was a can-do capitalist. And this is what you get out of can-do capitalism.
That's right.
But the question that just popped into my mind, I guess, is that Labour doesn't yet have a majority. I think there are something like 4 or 5 seats left to confirm, so they might end up with a proper majority. But in the case of a Greens-Labour coalition, do you think that would actually push Labour further to the left? Because the Greens, this election, have very much been talking about a lot of the policies that you're talking about. Obviously, they're not socialists. They are still capitalists. But they have been talking about green energy and housing and increasing the welfare and that sort of thing. Do you think that would have a measurable push to the left if that was the case of a Greens-Labour coalition?
I mean, I think I suspect that the Labour Party wouldn't agree to a formal coalition. I suspect there'd be some sort of arrangement worked out for the Greens to support supply and vote of confidence for the government on the floor of the parliament. I suspect, you know, in a lot of ways it would be better if Labor Party didn't have a majority and it was a hung parliament. That would be much better for the left and the working class movement. And, you know, I think the Greens, you know, certainly think they can do a lot in parliament. I mean, one of the Greens councillors said to me, you know, when I was talking about the need for the movements to be active on the streets, a Greens councillor said to me the other night that, but the Greens will be fighting the Labor Party in the parliament. And I said, yes, that's important, but that's not where the focus of change comes from. Change comes from the grassroots, from the people on the streets. And if you look at the history of progressive social reforms in Australia and around the world, not just in Australia, nothing has ever been handed to us by politicians. It's always come through the movements first, and then the politicians have maybe come along afterwards and, you know, maybe cemented the reform in legislation. But it's never come from politicians initially, and that's the mobilisation from below is what changes the balance of forces. And we saw that very graphically with the Equal Marriage campaign, where we went from 30% support for that, for equal marriage rights, when our comrade Rachel Evans in Sydney initiated the first National Day of Action, to, you know, politicians falling all over themselves to want to be identified with the campaign on the eve of the referendum. So, like, and that was consistent mobilisation. Probably they weren't as demonised as much as refugees at that point, the campaigners, because I think that at that stage the ruling class was focused on using racism as its key ploy to implement its neoliberal agenda. But still, that campaign took things from 30% support to overwhelming majority support. Yeah. And I think that's got to be our guide. So, yeah, but I do think, especially with the new Greens MP being elected in Griffith, being a more left-wing Greens, that is also going to put some pressure on the Greens for to be more left-wing and more progressive.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. And also, congratulations on your vote and Socialist Alliance and what, you know, they got in the seat of Wills. And, you know, there has been an increase of a socialist vote where socialist candidates were run. And we just want to know, you know, what do you think that means for politics here, you know, for the left, for people who want to see anti-capitalist politics?
Well, I think my feeling from this election and last election is that more people than ever before were turning up, especially to early voting. And this year I noticed that more with early voting than on election day. At early voting, huge numbers of people turning up to vote who had no idea who to vote for and just decided on the day. And that could be, that could mean they could vote for a scary party if that's who they met up with, like, you know, United Australia Party or whatever, or they might vote for Socialist Alliance or Victorian Socialists or Greens or whoever, or even Labor. I mean, Labor Party in the seat of Wills, and in quite a few seats in Melbourne, actually had a swing against it in in Melbourne. But, and the Greens had a small increase in their votes since the last election. In general, in the seat of Wills where I stood, the right wing, I mean, probably their vote combined of Pauline Hanson and Clive Palmer was around 7%. It was for, I haven't looked at all of the seats properly, but in Caldwell, for example, which covers Broadmeadows, Campbellfield and Craigieburn, it was the, that combined right-wing vote, also including the Australian Federation Party, was probably more like 17%. But in all of these seats, the safe Labor seats, there was a swing against Labor and a slight, small increase to the Greens of the order of about, you know, 1 to 2%. And then I think there are, there is an increasing number of people who are interested in considering a socialist vote. And I certainly know in terms of Socialist Alliance, there were a number of former Greens campaigners that were now campaigning for Socialist Alliance, because they want to see something more radical than the Greens. And some of these were people who might have originally very originally campaigned for the Labor Party, then they moved to the Greens, and then have moved to campaigning for Socialist Alliance. So I think they're coming out of the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, the housing crisis and a number of other things, I think have convinced a lot of people that capitalism can't deliver what it promised to deliver. Like once upon a time, capitalism promised, if you, you know, go and study hard and work hard, you'll get the house and you get the family and the kids and et cetera, et cetera. Now people might work hard and not be able to afford the house and not be able to afford childcare, or you might go and study and get all the qualifications, but then not be able to get a job in the area you studied for, so you're still stuck in the job you were doing when you're at uni, stacking shelves somewhere, and it's, and you might still not be able to afford the house. And so I think for that, there is, I think, a lot of people in the younger generation who might have once upon a time thought, oh, yeah, capitalism can deliver for me, even if it's not delivering for people in the global south and a small number of people in Australia. But now it's the number of people for whom capitalism isn't delivering is vastly increasing, and more people are wanting to see more left and radical solutions.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to end the interview, Sue. We are running out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I think that's probably it. Yeah. I mean, this is where I think it is important for socialists to stand in elections and to be active on the streets and trying to work out how we can build a stronger street mobilisations around these issues, because it's not guaranteed that a Labor government, even with Green support, will actually fix these issues.
Yeah, and we will come back to these topics later anyway. So if you think of more, we'll come back to it.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Thanks for all your hard work and work on the ground, and for an inspirational campaign. For listeners that just tune in, we were just talking to Sue Bolton from Socialist Alliance, who was a candidate for the seat of Wills. And she's also a veteran socialist activist and a three-term councillor on the Moreland City Council. We'll just play a quick song and we'll be back with our next interview with Liam Flanardi, who is an Australian Greens campaign manager for the seat of Griffith.
Ooh, what's the song?
So we are going to be playing Long Live Palestine by Lo.